Okay, gang, good to see everybody. Oh, Ditch and Ryan, you're there. It's always good to see him. He's my boss. He's in charge of the preaching here. And he's invigorated the temple so much by his preaching, dynamic preaching. We're so thankful to have him. There's such a nice crew of devotees here. We have Ditch and Ryan, Champaka dancing, and who else do we have here? Better make sure I mention everybody, else I'm going to be in trouble. Big trouble. Participants. Oh, Gopal, Ishwar Chaitanya, Radhasmarana, Shruti Priya, Tulsi Priya, Rajalila, and that's it. I'm right here. Okay, so we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava and get on with our program. Bhaktivat Sal is not online, that's why I would have mentioned his name. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Gopi Chana Ballabha Jaya Girivarudhari Jaya Girivarudhari Gopi Jana Malabha Jaya Giri Varudhari Jaya Giri Varudhari Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tirup Banachari Daya Kunja Vyadhi Jaya Kunja Vyadhi Yamuna Tirup Banachari Daya Kunja Vyadhi Jaya Kunja Vyadhi Jaya Randa Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Randa Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Kupichana Bhava Jaya Giri Varudhari Giri Varudhari Kupichana Jaya Giri Varudhari Jaya Giri Varudhari Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tirang Banachari Dara Kunjaviyari Kunjaviyari Yamuna Tirang Banachari Dara Kunjaviyari Jaya Kunjaviyari Jaya Randa Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Jaya Randa Madhava Jaya Kunjavihari Jai Om Vishnu Pad. Paramahansa Parvatakacharya also Teta Sadashi Shimad. His Divine Grace Abhaya Chalanad Bhaktivinanda Goswami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Seiko Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasiri Gaur. Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikovindas Haimkunda Radhakunda Kiri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavanam Ki Jai. Maturanam Ki Jai. Chakravasami Ki Jai. Yamunamai Ki Jai. Shrimati Lassi Devi Ki Jai. Sarvada Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pujani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. So, Om Meghanati Mananda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Merikam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Okay, so we're continuing with our reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we are reading from the 8th chapter of the Adi Leela, beginning text 14. Yeah, beginning with text 14. This is a very important chapter of the Chaitanya. Every chapter is very important. Okay, so let's share the screen with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Here we go. And let me just set some things here. I can see the participants. And see, maybe I can also put the other thing there too. That disappeared. Oh, there it is. All right, that way I can keep tabs on everybody. That's good. Okay, here we go. Yadiva tarkike tarkika kahi tarka se pramana tarka shastri sada ye save yamana. Okay, and the translation is, logicians say, unless one gains understanding through logic and argument, how can one decide upon a worshipable deity? It's a good question. Unless you use your brain, you shouldn't actually accept something blindly. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Dvaya Karaha Vichara. Vichara Karite Chite Pave Chabatkara. If you are indeed interested in logic and argument, kindly apply it to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you do so, you will find it to be strikingly wonderful. Wow, what an expression. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, or Thakur, comments in this connection that people in general and their different narrow-minded conception of life create many different types of humanitarian activities. But the humanitarian activities inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are different. For logicians who want to accept only that which is proven through logic and argument, it is a fact that without logic and reason, there can be no question of accepting the absolute truth. Unfortunately, when such logicians take to this path without the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they remain on the platform of logic and argument and do not advance in spiritual life. However, if one is intelligent enough to apply his arguments and logic to the subtle understanding of fundamental spiritual substance, he will be able to know that a poor fund of knowledge established on the basis of material logic cannot help one understand the absolute truth, which is beyond the reach of imperfect senses. Mahabharata, therefore, says, Achincha kalu ye bhava, na thamus targena yujiyat. It's from the Bhishma Parva, fifth chapter, text 22. How can that which is beyond the imagination or sensory speculation of mundane creatures be approached simply by logic? Logic and argument are very poor in spiritual strength and always imperfect when applied to spiritual understanding. By putting forward mundane logic, one frequently comes to the wrong conclusion regarding the absolute truth, and as a result of such a conclusion, one may fall down to accept a body like that of a jackal. Despite all this, those who are actually inquisitive to understand the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through logic and argument are welcome. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami addresses them, please put Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to your crucial test. And if you were actually a logician, you will come to the right conclusion that there is no personality more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. Let the logicians compare all the results of other humanitarian work with the merciful activities of Lord Chaitanya. If their judgment is impartial, they will understand that there is no other humanitarian activities can surpass those of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll explain that in a second. Everyone is engaged in humanitarian activities on the basis of the body, but from the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, text 18, we understand Antavanta imedeva nisya syokta shadivaraha. The material body is ultimately subject to destruction, whereas the spiritual soul is eternal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philanthropic activities are performed in connection with the eternal soul. However, one tries to benefit the body, it will be destroyed, and one will have to accept another body according to his present activities. If one does not, therefore, understand the science of transmigration, but considers the body to be all in all, his intelligence is not very advanced. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, without neglecting the necessities of the body, imparted spiritual advancement to purify the existential condition of humanity. Therefore, if a logician makes his judgment impartially, he will surely find that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most, or is the Mahapadanyayavatara, the most magnanimous, the audio weak, Ishwara Chaitanya said it's strong. Let me just look at the volume. It seems to be pretty strong. Wait a second.
Let me face the microphone more towards my mouth.
It might be stronger now. Let's see. Let me just turn it up a little bit. Just so everybody. Oh, it's good for everybody else. Let me just put it a little higher. So it's easier for people. It's a little higher now. Okay. The most magnanimous incarnation. He is even more magnanimous than Lord Krishna himself.
Hare Krishna.
Anyway, it's not, somehow or other it's not loud enough. Let me just put it up a little bit more, just so those of you can hear me better. Better to hear you with, Mom. Okay, let me set this up. Okay, this should be even better. Okay. Lord Krishna demanded that one surrender. unto him, but he did not distribute love of Godhead as magnanimously as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami offers Lord Chaitanya his respectful obeisances with the words, Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tise Namaha. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 19th chapter of the Madhya Lila, text 53. Lord Krishna simply gave the Bhagavad Gita by which one can understand Lord Krishna as he is, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is also Krishna himself, gave people love of Krishna without discrimination. So therefore we say that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most munificent, and he is the greatest philanthropist. Philanthropist is those who help people. So let me explain something about philanthropy. That's the activity of a philanthropist. Philanthropy is the activity of helping people. However, if you think that people are their bodies, when you help them, you will be doing them a disservice. What do I mean by that? Prabhupada gave a very unique definition of violence. Now, Prabhupada also accepted the commonly understood definition of violence, which means hurting someone. Killing someone, something like that, and that's prohibited. However, Prabhupada's unique definition of violence was that violence means to impede the spiritual progress of someone. Wow, that's interesting. Of course, when you kill someone, you definitely impede their progress, and no doubt about it. But when you mislead someone spiritually, you're deviating them from the ultimate goal of life. And you're being violent towards them. Just like if I steal your money, it's a violent activity, even though I may not hurt you, because I'm taking something that was meant for you. So by deviating you from spiritual life, and what do we mean by deviating you? There's different types of people who deviate you. One type of person is the person who preaches bogus philosophy in the name of spirituality. Like there was one person who said, yato mat, tato pat. Basically, do your own thing. I'm okay, you're okay. Okay. One person who said that. Not true. Like Prabhupada said, one time I was with Prabhupada, he sat down on the Vyasa Sanam and he said, they say I'm okay, you're okay. And Prabhupada said, we say you're not okay and we are okay. Anyway, that's one type of violence impeding someone's spiritual progress. Another type is actually helping people materially without a spiritual aspect to it. What do I mean? Okay, let's say I'm helping you materially. I see you're starving. Okay, let me give you some nice chicken to eat. When I give you some nice, of course, nice chicken. When I give you chicken to eat, I'm actually causing you to commit B karma. Activities that will drag you down further. So, karma, and akarma. So, we study that in the Bhagavad Gita. So, therefore, one has to be very careful in philanthropy to help people materially and spiritually, not in the name of material help to drag people down. So, both things should be done. As Prabhupada said in the purport here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was concerned with people's material welfare too. But ultimately, if you're concerned with people's material welfare, but not with their spiritual welfare, it's like the example Prabhupada gave of a bird in a cage. Yes, cage clean. Yes, you have to polish the cage. Sure, we're not objecting to that. However, if you don't feed the bird inside, the cage is useless, right? Unless you stuff your bird, not stuff him with food. You actually preserve his body. Anyways, that's a different subject matter. That's useless. Completely useless. So you have to feed the bird in the cage and polish the cage simultaneously. And that's real philanthropy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does that.
Lord Chaitanya and his representatives, like Srila Prabhupada, were very concerned with people's material welfare too. One time in Mayapur, Prabhupada saw that all the poor children were actually trying to eat the discarded remnants of the devotees from the leaflets that were thrown away. Prabhupada started crying, and he said, no one within a certain amount of miles from Mayapur should ever go hungry. But Prabhupada was very concerned with prasadam distribution. Because when you distribute prasadam, guess what? You help people materially as well as spiritually. And that's real philanthropy. And that's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Help people materially and spiritually. It's holistic. Okay. Next verse. Mahojanma kareyari shavana kirtana tabuta naipaye krishna pare prema dana. If one is infested with the 10 offenses in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, despite his endeavor to chant the holy name for many births, he will not get the love of God that is the ultimate goal of this chanting. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says in this connection that although one may go on chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra for many, many years, there is no possibility of attaining the platform of devotional service unless one accepts Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One must strictly follow the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu given in the Shikshashtaka number 3. Trinadabhi sunichena tarahi vasahishnana amarina manatena kirtaniya sadahare. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. One who follows this direction, being freed from the 10 kinds of offenses, becomes successful in Krishna consciousness and ultimately reaches the platform of loving service to the personality of Godhead. One must come to the understanding that the holy name of the Lord and the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself are identical. One cannot reach this conclusion unless one is offenseless in chanting the holy name. By our material calculation, we see a difference between the name and the substance. But in the spiritual world, the absolute is always absolute. The name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the absolute are all as good as the absolute himself. Thus, one is understood to be an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he considers himself an eternal servant of the holy name. And in this spirit, distributes the holy name to the world. One who chants in that spirit without offenses is certainly elevated to the platform of understanding that the holy name and the personality of Godhead are identical. To associate with the holy name and chant the holy name is to directly to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is clearly said, Sevam Mukhe Hi Jivado Swayameva Spurachara. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. The holy name becomes manifest when one engages in the service of the holy name. This service and a submissive attitude begins with one's tongue. Sevam Mukhe Hi Jivado. One must engage his tongue in the service of the holy name. Our Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. We try to engage all the members of the Krishna consciousness movement in the service of the holy name. Since the holy name and Krishna are non-different, the members of the Krishna consciousness movement not only chant the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, but also do not allow their tongues to eat anything that is not first offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord declares, now the famous verse from the Gita, Patram pushpam palam toyam yami bhaktya prayachati taraham bhaktyuparitam ishnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, text 26. Therefore, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has many temples all over the world, and in each and every temple the Lord is offered these foods on the basis of his demands. The devotees chant the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, and never eat anything that is not first offered to the Lord. The function of the tongue and devotional service, functions of the tongue and devotional service, are to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and eat prasadam that is offered to the Lord. Of course, I think one has to do more than that too. So more than that means you're chanting the Maha Mantra asking for service. So you have to serve according to your psychophysical propensity.
But you have to serve in a way that is described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the third verse of the Shikshashtaka as Vachranadapi Sunichena Turadi Vasahishnana Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. What does that mean? More tolerant than tree, devotable, sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. So one has to be ready to do whatever Krishna wants. Some of us are thinking, I don't want to do something that's too menial. No, it's not nice. It's not me. I'm not meant to be just a menial servant and clean the bathrooms or clean the pots. I meant to do something bigger in life. Well, then you are not empowered, Prabhu or Prabhi. You have to do something menial, just like I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement many years ago. And the first thing they had me do, other than going on Sankirtan, was to clean the toilets. Yuck! You may say, well, it's because you're from America, and you know, low-class family. No, I never did something like that in my whole life. I had refused to do it before that. But I did it for Krishna, and I felt bliss, and I cleaned the pots, and I felt bliss, and I made sure that every single black spot was off the pots. Prabhupada would look at the pots in the kitchen, and if there was a black spot on the bottom, Prabhupada would say, it's dirty, and you're in ignorance. Such a simple little thing like that, Prabhupada would comment on. But we are so proud. Nowadays, in some places in this country, you've got to hire people to clean the temple. It's ridiculous. Because we are chanting every morning, what? Mandiram Arjanado. That the spiritual master, that the spiritual master is engaged along with his disciples in cleansing the temple. That cleansing the temple is not different than cleansing the deity. But we all are thinking we're too good for that. We're too good to do gardening. We're too good to do that. I meant to be an intellectual, even though you have a, can I say, 75 IQ. But anyway, you know, we're thinking like that. But the more humble you become, the more you can win Krishna's favor. And that's why the training, when one joins the Krishna Conscious Movement, is training in humility. Brahmachari, Gurukule Vasandanta Gororitam. Then one learns to work Gororitam for the benefit of the spiritual master, which is the benefit of Krishna. People don't understand that. Simple point. Prabhupada was simply working for the pleasure of his spiritual master. That was Prabhupada's Ekeha Kurunandana. Vyavasayadmika Bhuthir Ekeha Kurunandana. That was Prabhupada's mood. And I was describing today in a seminar that we were having, I said, because I had that training, now in Krishna consciousness, I have imbibed Prabhupada's mood, so that when I think about doing something, I think, would Prabhupada be pleased by this, or would Prabhupada not be pleased? And I don't pick the things that Prabhupada would be displeased by, and I can try to pick the things that Prabhupada would be pleased by. You internalize the spiritual master because of the service attitude. You're thinking, I just want to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. You're not, unless you have a service attitude. It doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work. You could be the fanciest person, or Prabhu, or Prabhi in the world, and it's not going to work unless one has the service attitude. That's one point from this particular verse in purport. Another point is about offenses in chanting. And particularly, I think the most dangerous offense is the offense of criticizing Vaishnavas. Now, what do we see nowadays due to the modern internet, social networking, all that other wonderful stuff? We see that people just pile, they find a fault and they pile on top of someone like in a football game. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen American football. Someone gets tackled and the rest of their team, the person who was tackling, piles on top of the person who was tackled. So it's just, it's amazing. I was reading something today that someone sent me. I don't go around reading stuff on the internet. Someone sent me, they were getting discouraged because people were just criticizing them without any reason, accusing them of something that was, for all intents and purposes, completely false, one after the other. And then I send a note to someone who's one of those critics, and I said, look, I'm worried about your spiritual life. You're going to lose a taste for hearing and chanting. And he said, this is service to criticize Vaishnavas publicly. Oh, my God. I mean, if you have some criticism, do it privately to someone's face. You know, satya priyahitam, the Bhagavad Gita tells us. Speak truthfully, pleasingly, and beneficially. Just tell them, Prabhu, I have some correction, and that's how you should do it. But people don't. I mean, this internet and the people on it. I mean, it can be used for productive purposes, the internet. But so many people are just using it to vent their frustrations with the material world, their frustrations with each other. And in doing so, when they direct their frustrations or vent their frustrations in relationship to a Vaishnava, they're destroying their spiritual life. You know, we should see the good. Let us be like honeybees, not like the flies. Yuck. Madhumukhi. Anyway, so next verse. Yannatasu lava muktir bhukti gyanadhi punyataha sayam sarana saha shrayar haribhati sudur lava. By cultivating philosophical knowledge, one can understand his spiritual position and thus be liberated. And by performing sacrifices and pious activities, one can achieve sense gratification on a higher planetary system. But the devotional service of the Lord is so rare that even by executing hundreds and thousands of such sacrifices, one cannot obtain it. Prabhupada explains that Prahlad Maharaj instructs Matirna Krishnai Parto Sutova Mito Bidpadye Tagraha Vratanam. That's Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 30. Naisham Matishtavara Rukraman Vrim Vrishatyanartha Pagamho Yarartha Mahiyasham Paravrijo Vishekam Kinchananam Navaditi Yavat. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 32. These shlokas are to be discussed. The purport is that one cannot attain Krishna Bhakti or the devotional service of the Lord by official execution of the Vedic rituals. One has to approach as pure devotee. Narottama Das Thakur sings, Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Paiche Keva. Who has been elevated without rendering service to a pure Vaishnava? It is a statement of Prahlad Maharaj that unless one is able to accept the dust from the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnava, there is no possibility of achieving the platform of devotional service. That is the secret. The above-mentioned Tantra Vachana quoted from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.36 is our perfect guidance in this connection. So, another interesting verse was found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Rahuganai tat tapasa nayati na chejyat niravapanad grahadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryar vana mahatpada vrajo bishekam. That no one can become Krishna conscious by executing austerity, nor by becoming a sannyasi, nor by becoming a good grahastha, nor by immersing yourself in ice in the middle of the winter, or putting yourself in the middle of a ring of fire in the summer, only by the Jobi Shekham, the same thing, By taking a bath, basically, in the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee. Of course, that's metaphorical. What does that mean? Shushusho shradaranasya vasadeva gataruchi. You hear nicely from a pure devotee, and you follow. And that way, we give up our false ego. False ego is given up when one is trained, that one is a servant. The false ego indicates or means that you are the master. So I personally, me, dear Krishna Goswami, identify myself as Prabhupada's servant. If someone says, what is your identity? Gopi Bharata Padakama Dasa Dasa Dasana Dasa. I'm a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. And specifically, I'm Prabhupada's servant, and I'm very happy being that. Very, very happy. So I think Mr. Cohen has a question. You can ask a question.
Thank you, Gurudev. You were speaking a few minutes ago about doing humble service and not thinking that one is too good for a particular service because it's too menial. But what if you're asked to do a service that is very much against your nature, not because it's menial, but because it just doesn't fit your psychophysical nature? Like there's two somewhat, what would be considered menial services, washing pots or sweeping the floor. So due to one's bodily structure, you may not be able to wash big pots.
Well,
but you can very well much sweep the floor. So what is the...
Well, obviously, I mean, if one can't lift heavy things, you know, there's people who can't, I'm just using an example, they can't lift heavy pots, then obviously it's not his service. But as far as psychophysical nature, okay, my psychophysical nature is like Brahminical, more or less. To study things, to try to understand things in all different levels. However, I will do the needful if I'm able to. Like if someone asked me, I mean, so for example, if someone said, your service is to dance Bart Nacham, I would say, no way. Because I'm not able to. I mean, there's some certain things I'm not able to. Of course, one may say, the success potency of the Lord is built into the instruction of the spiritual master. And I accept that. So Prabhupada said, my service is to dance Bart Nacham. I would do it. I would do it because I am a surrendered soul. But anyway, getting back to, so there's obviously some things that are physically impossible for people to do because of different natures of the body. Now, that's one category which obviously is a reason why people can't do certain things. I mean, if the pot is bigger than you, then I think you got a problem there. But another side of this whole argument is that it's not my psychophysical nature. It's not a good argument, especially when one is in the ashram of the spiritual master. Because the whole point, when one... undergoes the basic training. We're talking about basic training in Krishna consciousness. There's two aspects of one's Krishna consciousness. One is the basic training, and then later on there's the marriage for many people. So in basic training, one is trained up, what is that? Ramachari Guru Kule Vasandandar Gurohitam. Vasandandar Gurohitam. Archyam Dasavan. He's trained up to be a Dasavan, to put aside his psychophysical nature and do things, not that are impossible, but do things that may not be his general varna. I mean, that's the training. And also when one takes sannyas, it's the same thing. Sannyas is a transcendental ashram, so you do things that are not your varna. I mean, for example, I was... when we built our temple here in North Carolina, I built the temple, you know, a lot of it. I laid the blocks, designed it and everything like that. Literally did the physical work, more than anybody else. And so, you know, because a sannyasa is transcendental, he does the needful.
But a householder generally should act according to his varna, whether it is Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. However, when one is living in the ashram of the spiritual master, getting the basic training, then whatever. And let me give you a practical example of that. That's a story in the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, there was a guru with his disciples living in the ashram. And the guru wanted to test his disciples. Okay, one of his disciples, he told them, make sure the irrigation ditches in the field are actually in good condition. So there's water going through them. Make sure there's no holes in the irrigation ditches. So one day the disciple didn't come back and the guru went out to find him and he found the disciple lying down to plug the hole in the irrigation ditch. That's nobody's psychophysical nature to do that. And the guru was so pleased because the disciple had actually learned the proper moon relationship with the guru that he blessed the disciple, and the disciple later on got married and followed his psychophysical nature as a householder. Another example is, there was a disciple of the guru whose psychophysical nature was to eat a lot. Okay? So, this guru wanted him to lose weight. And at that time, they didn't have this program called Weight Watchers. And so, the guru couldn't put him on the internet with some program to lose weight, so the guru basically sent him out to take care of the cows. He thought, you know, he goes out to take care of the cows. He's bound to lose weight because he's running around with the cows all day long. You know, it's good exercise for the guy. So, but the disciple was gaining weight. And the guru said, you know, what's happening? Why are you gaining weight? And the disciple said, because, well, I'm going out to take care of the cows. It's really great. I get a chance to beg from everybody who's out there. And people are so kind to me, seeing me as a starving disciple. They give me something to eat, and I'm enjoying life, Guru Maharaj. Thank you for the service. And so Guru Maharaj says to that disciple, hey, buddy, you are not supposed to take what you get from begging. You're supposed to give it to Guru Maharaj, me. And so the disciple says, yes, Guru Maharaj. Okay, Guru Maharaj. Anyway, so he goes out. Someone's laughing. So he goes out. And goes out again. And he still keeps putting on weight. And Guru Maharaj says, what's happening now? Aren't you giving me what you beg? And the disciple says, yeah, sure, I am, Guru Maharaj. I beg for you one time and for me the second time. And Guru Maharaj says, that's not the process. Get out there and don't take anything that you get from begging, just give it all to the ashram. And the disciple says, okay, Guru Maharaj, all right. So he goes out, and he's still gaining weight. And the Guru Maharaj says, you know, what's happening now? And the disciple says, well, I'm drinking the milk that the calves leave over. And I'm in ecstasy. And Guru Maharaj said, no, the milk's meant for the calves, you rascal. So he keeps chastising the disciple to train him up. And the disciple says, okay, Guru Maharaj. He goes out again, and he's still gaining weight. And the disciple say, and the guru says, what are you doing now? And the disciple says, well, when the calves are actually drinking the milk from their mother's tits, then I'm sucking at the same time from the side because there's some foam there. And Guru Maharaj says, no, the calves are just being merciful to you. It's meant for them. Stop, stop, stop. Don't eat anything until I give you permission. Actually, that's the training in a bona fide ashram. You're not supposed to eat unless the guru calls you to eat. Now, I wish we could do that. Here, it's a little bit different. The disciple calls the guru to eat. Anyway, so getting back to the point. So then the disciple goes out, and he's so hungry. You know, he really has a problem with hunger. So he starts eating the leaves of trees, and these trees are poisonous. The leaves are poisonous. And he gets blinded, and he falls into a well, a blind well. So he's down there at the bottom of a really deep ditch well.
And the guru goes out to try to find his disciples. He sees him at the bottom of this ditch, of this well. And he tells the disciple, just pray to the Ashwini Kumaras, who are like the demigods who are in charge of medicine, or doctors, whatever. It's not Dhanvantari, but they're actually medicine demigods. So this disciple prays to the demigods, and they appear and they give him some cake and said, this cake will cure you of your blindness. And he says, I'm not going to take the cake without my Guru Maharaj's permission. So he passes the test. They give him a blessing. He's cured from his blindness. Guru Maharaj is pleased. You've learned the lesson to be able to do anything your Guru Maharaj asks you. Now you can go out and get married and act according to your psychophysical nature. So really, that's the point. Obviously, just to reiterate, if one can't do something because of some physical limitations, we all have some physical limitations, obviously. Obviously, you know, my Guru Maharaj tells me to become a weightlifter, you know, it just wouldn't work, especially my age. So we all have physical limitations. But as far as our psychophysical nature is concerned, that you can do when you get married. But right now, when you're trained in basic training, or if you're taking sannyas, or if you've dedicated your life 100% to the Guru Maharaj's service, then that doesn't apply. For example, Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world and had to do a lot of things that were not brahminical. And he was cleaning up after a bunch of really sloppy people, cooking for them, cleaning the pots, doing everything to carry out the order of his Guru Maharaj, because he had realized, Vyavasayat Megabudhir, a.k.a. Kurunandana, that one point of determination to please Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for him, meant the perfection of life. This is a very important point. Thank you for asking that. So, but of course, if one's in the household order of life, yes, you should also do things to please your spiritual master. But generally, it's psychophysical nature time, boys. But in other ashrams, it's whatever Krishna wants, especially brahmachari. Brahmachari is servant. Servant. Or brahmacharini, servant. But people don't understand that. They're too good to do things. That's not an excuse, being too good to do things. An excuse is being unable to do things. You know, like if you were to ask Dhritarashtra to drive a car, that's definitely a good excuse why he can't drive a car. I mean, I don't think you should have Dhritarashtra drive a car. But, you know, if the spiritual master said, drive a car, he gives you the empowerment to drive the car. That's amazing. By the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a layman could walk, a dog can swim in ocean, or a blind man can see. Thank you for asking that question, Mr. Gopal Kohan. Okay, so I guess it is time to turn it over to the general public for questions. Hold on one second. Let me unmute you. Or give you the ability to unmute yourselves. Okay, who wants to ask a question? Who is a surrendered soul? Who here has an excuse?
May I ask a follow-up question?
Oh, you have an excuse. You have an excuse.
So many.
You can get your teacher to write you an excuse. Just like when you don't want to go to school, you get your parents to write you an excuse. Poor little Gopal. Well, he wasn't feeling well today. Actually, he went skiing, but that's so what's the question?
So in the beginning, when one is just coming to Krishna consciousness. Word.
In the beginning was the word. And the word was God.
So when someone has come to Krishna consciousness new they were not raised in Krishna consciousness, nor perhaps raised with understanding etiquette or proper behavior with the spiritual master, and they make the mistakes that you're describing, such as thinking that they're too good for something, or something else. So how much patience is to be expected by the advanced devotees and the spiritual master with such
Well,
devotees?
They should be obviously patient. Obviously patient for 1 or 2 hours. Until they obviously, I mean, obviously, this common sense, you know, someone comes in the temple and they say, "What's this? What's the Bhagavad Gita?" I mean, obviously, you got to teach them a few things first. But I walked in the temple the first day, the very first day, Sankirtan, clean the toilets. First day. And I had a very high educational background. Like I said, I never cleaned a toilet in my life. I thought that that's what mothers were for. That's why Krishna invented mothers, to clean toilets and clean clothes. Right?
So Gurudev, the argument could be made that because of your education, you were able to understand very quickly. But as you mentioned earlier, someone may have an IQ of, let's say, 75, like you said earlier, and they may not be able to come to that understanding so easily.
Yeah, so you give them more time. You give them more time. And people come from different cultures, too. Like, I mean, just to be fair, America is a specific type of culture where we're not really hierarchical. At least I wasn't brought up in a hierarchical culture. In my culture, I was taught equality. Except, you know, mothers are meant to clean, men are meant to be the boss. Anyway. At least I was
taught. I don't think that's the culture that you and I grew up in.
I was taught chauvinistic equality, that if you're a man, everybody's equal. If you're a woman, you're unequal. No, I wasn't taught that. I'm just joking. But the culture I was brought up in a matriarchal culture, that the women are the boss. And that's why if I come across a real bossy lady right now, I go into this post-traumatic stress disorder. So anyway. And I get very humorous. Anyway, so I was brought up in a rather flat culture. Flat culture means, you know, that, I mean, I was never taught racism or sexism, seriously. Or hierarchy, that I was better than the factory workers or anything like that. I was just taught that, you know, we're all human beings. And if you happen to be of a certain religion, you're a better human being. No, no. Oh, my God. So, anyways, so I was just taught we're all human. We're the chosen people. Anyway, so I was just taught that we're all human beings. No, seriously, I mean, I did not have a bit of sexism or racism in my training or my experience at all. I mean, it's really true. Really true. It just wasn't there. Or economic discrimination either. I was taught to respect. I mean, for example, my father owned some dry cleaning businesses, and there were many workers there. You know, people just worked pressing things, you know, ladies who just press shirts. And I saw the example of my father, that he just cared for them, and he was basically egalitarian. That was my father's example. You know, ladies of a different race, and they were pressing shirts and doing menial stuff. And I made friends with some of them. I mean, they're older ladies, obviously, not that type of friends. But anyway, I made friends, and I loved them, I appreciated them. So I really wasn't class conscious. Whereas some people come from some parts of the world where it's more hierarchical, where people are very class conscious. Like for India, for example, that you'll have the outcasts, the untouchables, you'll have the brahmanas, and they're very much, not everybody in India, but people are very much class conscious. So it's harder for people coming from a culture like that to accept menial service. Because, I mean, for example, I visited some friends in India, in the big cities, and they have these servants, and they treat the servants really badly. And sometimes these really young girls who are their servants, and it's just, I just go, oh my God, how can you treat a human being like this? But they don't think anything of it. It's just like the hierarchical culture that they've been trained in. And I just can't tolerate it. It's really hard for me to deal with it. So when people from that sort of cultural background join, it is much harder because of the conditioning to accept some menial service. And I've seen that. I mean, I've dealt with people that I asked one lady who came from a culture like that one time to clean the kitchen. She said to me, "Who do you think I am? Do you think I'm that type of person?" I got really upset. I said, no. Anyway, I got upset. I won't say what I said, but I got very upset. So it is a fact that people who come from certain cultures where there's more hierarchy have a trouble adapting to that. I didn't have any trouble because I respected people. I mean, we had, I don't want to use the word maids, but we had people come in and clean our house. And to us, they were just like friends. When I was young, it wasn't like, you know, some lower class person coming in. It was just like, you know, some nice person coming in, and you respected them for what they did. So it's hard when people have that cultural background, the discriminatory background, like that. So yeah, there are problems. So, but still, you give them some time, train them up. And unless one becomes Sharanadapi Sunichena Torari Vasahishnana, then they won't be Kirtaniya Sadahari, Amani Amandadena. Until you come to the point of appreciating everyone else and loving everybody else and seeing beyond the body and being ready to do whatever Krishna wants, then you're not going to be able to really be absorbed in Krishna's holy names. That's the problem. Okay, Jaga has a question.
A devotee said the other day that those grihasthas whose children are grown are automatically no longer grihasthas, they're vanaprasthas.
Okay, he should try preaching that to them, see how they like that. Because what is it? A vanaprastha, the word best definitely means going to the forest. But as far as vanaprastha practically is concerned in Kali Yuga, it means serving Krishna with no more sense gratification and certainly not engaging in economic development anymore. You know, you don't engage in economic development. I mean, it's just not vanaprastha. You just take shelter of Krishna, you serve Krishna full time. It's almost like brahmachari life. Not exactly the same, because one remains with one's wife in a holy place, etc. That's called kshetra sannyas, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, because Gadadhar Pandit was that type of kshetra sannyasi. So, no, it's not vanaprastha when the children are grown up, unless one becomes vanaprastha. That means dedicated fully and wholly and solely to the preaching. That's practical vanaprastha. And sannyasa is fully, wholly, solely to the preaching and no wife. That's the only difference. So, yeah, they're not automatic. It's not you're automatically vanaprastha. It's like saying someone whose wife leaves him is automatically a sannyasi. Because sometimes someone's wife leaves him and then he looks for another one. So he's not automatically a sannyasi because he has no wife. And someone's automatically not a brahmachari, even though they're not married and they're, let's say someone is single, he has no romantic relationship, he's not automatically a brahmachari. Because a brahmachari is one who is a humble servant of the spiritual master. That's the definition. So it's not enough to have your children grown up to be a vanaprastha. I mean, many people whose children are grown up to spend the rest of their lives visiting the children and the grandchildren. You know, so it's not a vanaprastha. Okay? So you just tell them, if this person wants to be a vanaprastha, we have a procedure. It's still... Actually, even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said something like, he said about himself, before he took sannyas, this is before he married a second time, because his first wife passed away, obviously. So he said, I'm a householder now, but actually it doesn't make any sense unless I have a wife. So he got himself a wife, second wife, Vishnupriya. So you can be a householder without a wife. That's kind of hard if you hold a house. Grihasta. All right, on that happy note. Who else has a question? Oh, Sumukh.
Yes, Gurudev, I have one small question, Gurudev. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says in 15:15, Vedas are sarvaid aham vedo, from the Vedas I am to be known. So, yeah. My question is, Brahma taught the four Vedas to the four Kumaras. And how come they didn't know about Krishna? Because, you know, they were not believing in the form of the Lord. And when they went to Vaikuntha, and they saw the Tulsi leaf and Chandan, they smelled, then they realized that they said, this is Lord Narayan or Vishnu. So how come they didn't know about it?
They knew it. They knew about Krishna, but they did not think that worship of Krishna was supreme. Why else would they go to Vaikuntha unless they knew about Vishnu? Mm. They knew about Vishnu, but they weren't convinced that Vishnu was superior to the Brahma Jyoti. That's the only difference. Okay. Obviously, they knew about Vishnu because why go to Vaikuntha unless you know about Vishnu?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. But they just didn't have that conviction. They were still attached to Brahman effulgence for one reason or other. But as soon as they smelled the tulsi leaves and flowers offered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God, they became attracted and understood the actual highest aspect of the Supreme Absolute Truth. All right?
Yes.
Yeah, you can hear about, a lot of people hear about Krishna or Vishnu, but don't understand that's the highest. And somehow or other, they didn't understand it was the highest until they came in touch. And then at that point, they had their realization.
Yes, and in today's Chaitanya Charita, there's a slope. Bahu janma kare yadi sharvana kirtana, tabo na paya Krishna pada prema dhana. Even we hear, and whatever we hear, but if we do not... Then I read the translation and it's written there. Even if you hear it, if you do not follow the 10 principles of chanting, then it is no use.
Yeah, you have to chant.
But without offenses.
Without offenses, yes. Yeah. Chant without offenses. Or just in the clearing stage. Try to get rid of offenses. Okay, let's take Rakesh, and that'll be the last person we... speak to today.
Gurudev. Thank you, Gurudev. Yeah. Please accept my humble obeisances. Gurudev, I have a question. Thank you. I have a question regarding Tulsi Maharani. Like, people say, do not chew on Tulsi leaves. Is it true?
Well, you offer the Tulsi leaves have to be offered to Krishna.
Yes, so as can we chew it up?
I think so. I mean, many times I'm taking prasadam and tulsi leaves are mixed in there, and I'm advertently or inadvertently chewing on tulsi leaves. As long as they're offered, I don't see why you wouldn't chew on tulsi leaves, because you're taking them into your body, which is a repository of stool, mucus, and urine anyway. Anyway, there's so many injunctions and rituals. If you really get into it, you won't be able to do anything.
Yes.
If you try to follow all the rituals, you'll go crazy. You wouldn't be able to eat carrots. That would be terrible, not eating carrots. You wouldn't be able to do a lot of things. During Chaturmasa period, you wouldn't be able to shave or cut your nails or anything like that. I guess that's good if you're Sirpanaka. Long nails, you know, during Chaturmasa.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't worry. Just be simple and serve Lord Chaitanya and preach Krishna consciousness and share Krishna consciousness with others. I mean, this is Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nama Sankirtan. Krishna Shakti Vadana He Tari Pravartana. In this age of Kali, the real Dharma is Krishna Nama Sankirtan. And we should be empowered to present and preach it to others. Okay, we're going to end. Thank you all for joining us. Let's say if Aditya Narayan is on, does he want to say anything? I don't know if he's still on.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Bol.
I don't have any announcements, Maharaj. Thank you so much for a nice class.
No announcement. Thank you. Thank you very much. Everybody, and just one announcement, everybody be careful. Wear a mask, as you saw Aditya Narayan Prabhu doing. I'm not wearing a mask because it's just me alone in my house. I'm not afraid of giving myself infections. So there's no need for me to wear a mask while I'm alone. But in general, when you're out there, if you're in any place like in America where the virus is rampant, I mean, I was speaking to some of our congregational people today and some of them got the virus. And so please be careful. We want to protect the Vaishnavas. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. We'll see everybody tomorrow night to continue our Chaitanya Charitamrita reading. Hari Bol.